7-day intensive seminar, School of the Master, Lecture 14. I train myself in unconditional love, absolute. One-pointed, I am able to keep my attention on my desire. I have my nose in the right place, and all confusion ceases in my life. I know that I, in fact, have everything by right of choice, and in this revelation I claim I am unpossessed in all. Since I know who and what I am untouched by the illusionary world and train my thinking on the absolute love, unconditional love. I train myself in unconditional love. Is that a possibility to do that? To train ourselves in unconditional love? Not to be the slightest bit concerned who it is we're dealing with, but to love everybody equally? Can you do that? Rex, can you do that? Rex, can you love everybody equally? Down. Stay. Good boy. Can you love everybody equally? Mm-hmm. Are you as happy lying here on the floor as you are wandering around? Yeah. Have to give that a second thought, huh? But you see, when you're right here, you get my unconditional love just oozing over and falling over on top of you, making you just feel like an angel, you know. Isn't that wonderful? Hmm? Yes, it's wonderful. One-pointed, I'm able to keep my attention on my desire. He's got his attention on his desire. Now we shall see what his desire is. His desire is to get a drink of water. Now that makes a lot of sense. One-pointed, I'm able to keep my attention on my desire. Now, we talked about our friend who is in prison and who is having certain bone problems, object problems on his body. And what is the quickest way? What is the quickest way he could get it back? I just slid my computer across the table here and it squeaked and said, hey, I want attention. What is the quickest way that he can get his feet back? Now, he can have a prosthesis, which he has already, and he can have another prosthesis, which he'll probably be getting. But what are those prostheses going to do to him? They're going to make him feel he has to learn how to live with them. And the minute you feel, ever, that you have to learn how to live with anything, growth stops. Growth stops on your eternal journey of your original what?
Purity and integrity.
Growth stops on your original purity and integrity awareness. Now, it's there. Why is it there?
It's always there.
We saw it there. It is there because photographically it is shown as an electronic impulse on a piece of paper. That leg is still there. Wouldn't it be something? Have to take him down to UCLA and have him on that Carillion photography machine and have him taking a picture. I wonder if Miss Moss is still there. But it's now some almost 40 years later. Time does fly. Good for her. Okay, now. One-pointed, I'm able to keep my attention on my desire. Now, let's just use him as our case here. If he would like to experience his legs, his feet, everything operating perfectly, his body is fine. His torso is fine, his arms is fine, his mind is becoming more beautiful every day. His attitude toward life is becoming more beautiful, even with all the difficulties that he's going through. People say that when you're in prison, you go to pot, you go worse. You know, if you're bad, you get badder. Well, with him, it appears that he is getting gooder. He is putting a new cause in motion for a new perfection for himself. And that's beautiful. Now, Wouldn't it be interesting? Here we are, this group of people, and if we use him as an experiment, and you don't really know him, but if we use him as an experiment, and we say, his legs are perfect, his feet are perfect, his white stem cells are converging on his feet and his legs and bringing them into perfect harmony with his original purity and integrity. He is now living his original purity and integrity with his legs and feet. He is now living his original purity and integrity with his legs and feet. Now, normally we wouldn't do something like that. Normally we'd just say, you're whole and perfect. But we're learning about the white stem cells right now, and we're learning how to put them into work. Have any of you ever gone to school? Have you ever been children going to school? And as your little children going to school, you have a teacher, at least I had teachers, who liked us to learn new words every week. And so they'd give us one or two words every day to learn. And we had to learn how to pronounce it, and we had to learn how to use it in a sentence. And so I told you about my friend Jeffrey Etherington, who is now a multi-billionaire himself. He's just an absolute genius. I kowtowed with him as I was a kid. And, of course, he was just an ordinary guy then. But we'd walk home from school, and on the way home from school, we'd do our lessons. And our lesson was to learn two new words every day and learn how to use them. And I came up intelligent phrases for the sentences. I came up with useful phrases for the sentences. But him, he came up with sentences that were so scientifically profound, my goodness, you had to have a dictionary to understand what he was talking about. And he was correct, because his dad was a great scientist. But he was just amazing. He made me fall in love with vocabulary, fall in love with language, fall in love with words, because he made them so exciting. And I said, oh, come on now, that doesn't mean that. Yes, it does. And he had his dictionary in his bag always, too, you know. He was never without the dictionary. I soon followed his suit. But the thing is, that was great. He was just brilliant. And he taught me all those things. And he didn't teach it to me as he was teaching it to himself. Because he was learning it. When he went to school, teachers would say, okay, who's got some definitions for these words now? Up would go his hand, you know. And then, after a while, he didn't put his hand up anymore. Because he listened to what the other kids were saying. He said, my gosh, you know, where are they? Are they in some la-la land where nothing's happening? That word is saying all these things, and they pick this simple little first definition in the dictionary, you know? They don't dig down in there to see what that word really means, and they don't look above it to say, where did it come from? Out of what vocabulary, what language, what nationality did it come from? Was it the Greeks, the Romans, the French? Was it the Italians, the Germans? Who was it? Who were the crazy people who first thought of those words and brought them into being? At the time they brought them into being, they were thought crazy. But now they're common. And how are they being used, you know? How is it being used? How wonderful that is. Well, one point I'm able to keep my attention on my desire. So, with Jeffrey, it was easy to be one-pointed. That's interesting. My son, Mark, had a friend whose name was Jeffrey. And I went to Minneapolis. I had a church there, and Mark stayed home, and he let out the rooms of our house to a couple of his friends. And one was Jeffrey, and the other was his brother Bob. And Jeffrey was an absolute wizard, super intelligent kid too, and a boxer. His father was a boxer too, but a super intelligent kid and a boxer. And Bob was the one who went to the Summit Lighthouse and didn't go to hear Jesus speak, but Jesus was speaking through Claire Prophet at the Summit Lighthouse where he was working, and he didn't go to hear him speak. He had to stay and take care of the bookstore. And I thought, you crazy kid. Well, anyhow, Mark's Jeffrey told him about Hinduism, which he already knew a little about, and told him that the Hindu people do not eat meat because they do not want to take a life. And they don't kill bugs, they don't do anything like that. And while I was gone, which was only a month or so before I came back to visit, while I was gone, the household completely changed from a hamburgers, hot dogs, and potatoes house to a total vegetarian house. Total vegetarian. And that was when Mark was 18. And from that day forward to now, and he's 52 now, 53, he is still an avowed vegetarian. He believes it because it meant sense, made sense to him. That was what his life was, and he's been following that ever since. But now, he's living it, and he's reaping the harvest of being a vegetarian. For him, that is a very wonderful, fulfilling, and important aspect of living. Now, what are we going to do with our friend who has these additions? Are we going to see him with prostheses, with wooden legs and wooden feet and stuff? Or are we going to see him with the real McCoy? Are we going to see him seeing a photograph of his body, of his legs, a Carillion photograph, showing the electrical energy body that's actually still there, that the legs are actually still there, even though they're not there, they're cut off? Because everyone's body is an entirety in itself. And as an entirety in itself, it cannot be taken away from, or cannot be destroyed, or cannot be removed. Now, this is something science will come to state one day too, but this is a fact. The energy body is still there. The photographs by Dr. Thelma Moss at UCLA showed that very clearly and very vividly. Although she wasn't a crusader and a researcher, so she didn't go out and promote this, you know. She just showed the class these things, and we in the classes were utterly amazed and delighted and thrilled, and she was just happy that we were happy. Teachers always like it when their students enjoy what they're learning. So, I believe, and that was a few years ago, I believe the day will come and science will say, hey, all matter exists, whether it is in the visible or invisible realm. And just because it is in the invisible realm does not make it unavailable. It only makes it out of mind, out of sight, you know, or out of sight, out of mind. If you can't see it, you don't think about it. So we want to think about these things. Well, for him, let's just see his feet in place, his leg in place, everything in divine order. And he's going to be visiting us one day. And when he comes to visit us, he will be dancing out here on his own feet and as happy as can be. He'll be ready to mount the tractor and take care of all the things that he says he wants to do. And I have a feeling, and I'm going to say this out loud right now, I have a feeling that as we do our work here, and we see him with his legs perfect, he will choose to go out and live a life that he has not lived for the last 30 years that he's been in prison. And I don't know that this will be enough for him here on campus, because now he'll be able to go dancing. Now he'll be able to be the charming Beauvant that he is. Now he'll be able to go out and cook for his friends and family and so forth, who have sort of ignored him all this time because he was a naughty little boy. And now that he's a nice little boy, they'll delight to have him in their homes and their family. And it's possible we may not even see him. But beautiful, beautiful. We have no possessions here. If you had any idea how many people we don't have here, who have been here and have made the step, because you don't know who they are, and that's lovely, but you don't know who they are. And should this young man accept the gift that we're thinking for him, we won't ever know that we knew him either. He will be a spiritual healing, and he will be out of our world. He may be in our world, but we won't know him in our world as a person who one time had those problems. You follow me? Because if we know him in our world as a person who one time had those problems, he can have those problems again. This is why the reoccurrence of cancer takes place in people's bodies and minds, because they remember it. Like the young man in the article that I read to you, 30 years old, and he came down with this terrible cancer, and then he went out and he did all the things that he felt would clear his body up of those things, and it was gone. Cleared him up, just like clean as a whistle. But he remembered it. He remembered it. And he told everybody about the story. He told, and then later, he had it back again, and he died from it. Silly, unnecessary. But he couldn't give it up. He wanted to have the ability to say, look at my scars, look at my hurts, look at my body, look at what I've gone through. And Heinz, when he has his spiritual healing, you look at his body and you'll see nothing. You'll see nothing but Heinz. Nothing but the pure Master Heinz in every possible way. And that's the way we see him now. But he has to see himself that way. And when he sees himself that way, then he will experience it. When Heinz looks in the mirror and the only thing he sees is me, no, the only thing he sees is his perfect body, then he's got it made, you see? Then he's got it made. And that's what counts. That's what counts. And the same with you, each one of us. Because each one of us have little hang-ups. And each time you look in the mirror, if you see that miserable, slobby person that gives you a headache and makes you feel unhappy and got problems, send them away. Send them away. Say, hey, this is my mirror. This is a happy mirror. It's every face that looks in this mirror is a happy face. And I'm a happy person. And I'm looking in this mirror and I'm seeing a happy face and I'm seeing a happy life. Now, you unhappy people, you unhappy circumstances, I don't want you in this world. If you will come back and be happy, I'm glad to have you, but no unhappy people. And I don't want you to ever remember that you were unhappy. Oh, me, I had bad parents, and I had a bad life, and I was bad raised, and I was... Oh, forget it. You think you're alone? Everybody was raised by inferior parents because they weren't you. If you had been your parent, you would have been a superior parent. Ha, 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 you know? And just think, you're lucky to have had your parents be that far along on the scale of life. Think if they had been your earlier parents, your Neanderthal parents, you know. You would have turned out to be quite different, you know. You'd have different values and different ways of looking at things. And hey, that's not so unusual, not so strange. Because a lot of parents are Neanderthal candidates, you know. They go around hollering and swearing at each other and throwing things at each other, not able to keep their temper in line and not able to adjust their emotions. Their emotions, you take them away and run them into the dump. And then they say, what happened, you know? Well, it's because I felt sorry for myself, that's all. And when you feel sorry for yourself, you have no control of your emotions. Now, this is not something that we want to be interested in. Every person who comes into our world, starting with yours truly, ourself, is a balanced, loving, gentle person, an unconditionally loving person, a person who loves themselves unconditionally and everybody else. To love unconditionally means there are no conditions to your love. You say, I like me, and you say, I like you, and you say, I don't like some of the things you do, but I like you. Now, that's okay. Now, when you say, I love you, you don't see the things people do that are not nice. You only see the things people do that are nice, and you create them doing nice things. When you are unconditionally loving, you are absolutely blind to anything that you might call not good. You cannot see anything in anybody other than their beauty, their goodness, their truth, the original purity and integrity. Yeah. Really. Now, in the movie Harry Potter, he had a couple of bad characters in the movie, especially some of the boys on the other team, and he could have been hateful and mean, and he could have done all sorts of things to those other boys and really given them a hard time, but he didn't. What was Harry Potter's primary concern with the other? For us, it was a shill that was brought in there. It was just something to attract our attention away from Harry and to show how good Harry was. But what were these characters in Harry's life for? Why were they there? Why did Harry Potter, the human being, have those other human beings in his life?
They were his tempters.
Hmm?
His temptations.
To do what?
To
be his temptation? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they were tempters to him about his own character. They were tempters to him to see if he was truly unconditional love. If he was not unconditional love, he'd want to get back at them. Just like the red-headed boy,
Ron
Beasley. He wanted to get back. You know, and what did Harry say? No. There's another way we can handle this. There's some other way we can do this here. And Hermione, she wanted to learn so fast because her mind was so agile. She wanted to grasp all these things. So she created the dean of the school giving her a cheat toy. And the cheat toy was that she could live 3 days in one day. She could go to 3 different classes in one day, which were all at the same time, because she wanted to get all that information, and she was able to do it. She was brilliant. And then came emergency time, and again, he gives her the cheat toy, and she takes it, and she has time go back, so they can find out what they needed to find out. You know, really something. Now, that's a cheat toy as far as a writing script goes, too, because they knew ahead of time what was going to happen behind time, and they recognized these things, and it's so fantastic. Well, when we are one-pointed, and when we are unconditionally loving, we always see the good in others. 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 Why?
Because it's our reflection.
It's our reflection. We always see the good in others because it's our... And whenever it's not our reflection, whenever we see anything in anybody else that's not good, we can be sure we're not looking with the eyes of unconditional love. We can be sure that we're not doing our homework. And doing our homework is exceedingly important, to always keep ourselves pure and clean and beautiful in every way. In every way. You see, we're the masters of our world. We're the masters of our life. And it's interesting. Now, we always put things back where we got them. We always return things that we borrow. We always tell people if we take something of theirs and borrow it and then return it. We always do these things. And if we don't, what happens? Then the person who had these things and who knew where they were and went to look for them, like I did, I learned to look for some plugs, and they weren't where they were supposed to be because they'd been moved. And then all of a sudden I remember, yes, I know where they've been moved to. They're in a box up at the Oasis. That's where the plugs went. They went to a box up. They didn't come back down here where they were taken from, because they were taken from a pile which seemed to be a very disorderly pile, and certainly no one would ever know that they weren't put back in that pile because the pile was such a mess. But if any of you are... Well, I don't know how to say this, but if any of you... are wizards. That's a good word, but it's a little rich word. But if any of you are wizards, you'll realize that you go through life with your mind wide open at all times. And with your mind wide open, you remember everything you've seen. Harry Potter walked through this village, and he knew everything that was in every store. He was window shopping. He knew which was the wand stores and what wands they had and how many they had and how long the store had been there and which wands, how wands were supposed to be made and stuff like that. He knew that. And who else was a very wise person? Now, he knew that. He knew all the other stories. He knew everything that was in the stories. But who also knew that, that you can think of? Come on now. Come on now. You know who that is. Hermione. Hermione knew everything. Hermione knew everything. No matter what it was that needed to be known, if it's time for the hand to go up in class, hers went up. She had the answer to everything and everybody's question, and she was Miss Know-It-All. And she's correct. She knew it. She knew it. I don't even have false teeth, and I'm whistling. She knew that, and she was very wise, and she was very intelligent. But she was a youngster, not realizing that it's not important to tell everything you know. You know, because if the wise wizards would tell everything they know, there'd be no reason for students, you know. There'd be no reason for classes or anything else. Now, I have my nose in my right place and all confusion ceases in my life. When we put our nose in the right place, all confusion ceases. Now, how do we get confusion to cease in our life? How do we get confusion to cease? We get confusion to cease by having our nose in the right place. Heinz, what is it? What's the right place to have your nose?
To mind my own business.
In your what?
To mind my own business.
To mind your own business. Exactly. Why do you think you should have your nose? Where do you think you should have your nose? Gregor?
Same way, to mind my own business.
Now, Gregor, I have a rule. We never say in the same place or ditto. We say what we want to say. Now, what did you say?
To mind my own business.
To mind my... Isn't that much more positive and powerful than to say the same way? Then, yeah, I got to think back on what he said, and did I agree with him or not? And if I didn't agree with him, and then you wanted to be the same way, then I'm not agreeing with you, and maybe you didn't mean what he meant, and he maybe didn't mean what he meant, and he didn't mean what you were meaning by saying that you agreed with what he meant. And, you know... So you don't say ditto and you don't say the same way. You say what you want to say. Now, Gregor, what would you do?
What would I do?
You? Huh? See, you've forgotten what you were going to answer me because you were saying...
It was like a new question I didn't...
Huh?
It was like a new question I didn't get.
Well, it's an old question.
You talk a lot in between.
Yeah, it's a reiteration of the old question with new clothes. Okay, what would be your opinion about what you should do as far as with your nose?
I mind my own business.
How clear and concise. Ellen, what do you think your nose is for?
To mind my own business.
Now, I would think your nose would be like Rex's nose, be out sniffing, you know, and checking your neighborhood and checking everything around. What do you think, Sylvia?
I keep my nose in my own business.
You mind your own business. That's great. You're not like Rex, huh?
No.
He's got his nose everywhere.
I am a lot like Rex, but...
you got your nose in everybody else's business?
No, it's not that hard.
You're checking out their genitals to see if they're healthy and so forth, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Not really.
Not really. Well, you see, you got to be careful when you say that you like Rex. You got to say, how?
In many ways.
But don't do that to me. How? Don't say many ways. How? Any way. Just
I'm
what?
A lovable being like Rex.
We are what?
I'm a lovable being like Rex.
That has nothing to do with his nose, does it?
No.
Well, what we're talking about his nose. Now, how does his nose staying in his own business, and you keep your nose in your business, how does his nose be something that you are like? You said you're like Rex in that respect.
No, I didn't mean his nose. Sorry about that.
Well, because we're talking about the nose. And so, you see how we can get off the subject and not even know we're on it? So, okay. But, okay, you mind your own business. That's
yes.
Great. Now, should I ask you or not, what do you do with your nose?
I smell with my nose with unconditional love.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And as far as anybody else's business?
I can do it with unconditional love.
You can what?
I can do anything with unconditional love.
You mean you can put your nose in their business with unconditional love?
I wouldn't call it that way anymore. Yes,
that's one way of getting away from it. But anytime we put our nose in anybody else's business, putting your nose in someone else's business means that you have suggestions for them to improve their lifestyle. Now, is that what you mean?
No.
No, that's what it means to put your nose in their business. And so when Sylvia said she's a lot like Rex, who puts his nose in everybody's business, you know, and that's not really what she meant, because she really has her nose in her own business in a beautiful way, okay? Now, are you satisfied with your answer?
The way I meant it, yes.
But how can we know what you meant if you don't tell us what you meant?
You know.
Now, what did you mean?
With unconditional love, I smell only my business. Kind of.
All right. That's better than somebody else's. But
kind of around it.
Well, when a baby does its business, or a dog does its business. You know. You have to think of the many definitions that a word has, you know. That's why I had such a good time with Jeffrey Etherington. He challenged my mind to the peak of ecstasy in thinking of ways that words can be used. And I would come to school and I would use some of his words, his definitions, and the rest of the kids would say, "Boy, who do you think you are?" And then Jeffrey would come to school and he'd use the same definitions. They'd say, "You are so wise," you know. Jeffrey built up the illusion of being a brilliant, genius kid. I built up the illusion of being a normal person. And then they thought I was putting on the dog by pretending that I knew all that stuff, you know. But it didn't bother me. It wasn't long before the entire class thought, who is to team up together? Herb and Jeffrey, you know. And that was a compliment. I was known by the people I associate with, yeah. And Jeffrey, oh, socially he wasn't such a graceful person, and you know, things like that, because he was always with his nose in the books, but always a dedicated guy. What would you do with your nose?
I love my nose because it is a very precious tool for myself, and I keep it therefore only for my own interest.
You keep your nose in your own business. Very good. And after all of this here, let's see what sort of magical new ideas you can come up with by saying this old stuff in a new way. Huh?
I keep my nose in my own business, and I also explore with my nose like Rex.
Well, now, isn't that good? Isn't that great? That's good. That, you see, you explore with your nose like Rex. Rex is not doing anything right or wrong or indifferent. He's just exploring with his nose because that's one of his tools to explore with. And does he explore with his eyes? Rex? Yeah, he's looking around, checking everything out, you know. And does he explore with his paw? Yeah, it's always going like this. Are you going to pet me? Are you going to play with me? Are you going to be my friend, you know? Or must I go find someone who will? And the hammer, yeah, yeah. But he doesn't mean it as a hammer. Because if he meant it as a hammer, you'd be laying on the floor. He's quite a strong dog. I know that I, in fact, have everything by right of choice, and in this revelation I claim I am unpossessed in all. How does this affect us here, that we're by right of choice, we have everything, and we claim it? Does that mean that we go out and we want everything that we see or think? What does it mean? What does it mean?
When I'm unconditionally loving, I have everything.
Well, yes. When you're unconditionally loving, you have no possession. And when you have no possession, then you have everything. The minute you have possessions, you have very few things, because you only have what you possess. And when you're unpossessed, when you are not possessive, when you are what's unpossessed, not possessive, you know, then you have everything. You have everything, because nothing is denied you. Everything is given to you. No matter where you go, people do things for you. Like in the show The Secret there, the lady was walking down the street, and at first she got up with a run in her stocking and everything was going wrong, and the toothpaste didn't come out of the toothpaste tube, you know, and then the next day the toothpaste didn't come out of the toothpaste tube, and she brushed her teeth without it, you know, and then she went and had her toast and everything, and she went out the door, and then she didn't have money with her for some reason, and so at that moment the gentleman reached over and says, "This is for you. You know, you are such a glorious looking lady. This is for you." And she said, "Well, thank you, thank you." No preconceived idea of what the fellow meant or what the fellow might mean or what was going to come after that. Hers was just, "Hey, this is just a gift to me as I walk down life's way. No ties, no strings, no possession. I just walked down the way." And as she did that, she was free. But if she had gone down after knocking the alarm clock off the bed and getting a run in her stocking, her silk nylon stocking, and so forth, then what would she think? If somebody would offer her some flowers, she'd say, "What do you think I am? You know. But when she has the right attitude about herself, somebody offers her flowers, she says, "Thank you. How nice of you. You're so wonderful. Bye." And you go on your way, you know. This is the mastery of being yourself and being unconditional love. And this is what all of us want to do. Be the mastery of unconditional love. Okay. "Since I know who and what I am, I am untouched by the illusionary world and train my thinking on absolute unconditional love." Okay? Do you know the illusionary world? And you think you do. But you don't. The reason I say you don't know the illusionary world is because you let the illusionary world press your buttons. Every time you let someone make a remark that makes you unhappy, you're not master of the illusionary world. You don't know it. You're letting someone press your button. Every time somebody comes in and says, "Wow, you look great," you know, and you straighten up and say, "Yeah, thank you very much. Oh, wow, you made my day. You made my day. You made my day." He owns you. He doesn't want anything from you. Perhaps he doesn't even give a damn about you at all. He's just being himself and being a happy guy. But you are free. If he touches you, presses your button, and you feel good because of him, then he owns you. But if you have him say those things and you say, "True, that's true," and just go on your way, you know, not think anything about it. Everybody says that about you, you know. Everybody says you're wonderful, you're good, you're beautiful. And then nobody can push your button. somebody comes along and says, I just gave you a nice compliment. You didn't even say thank you. Oh, forgive me, forgive me, forgive me. But everybody's giving me compliments today, and I've been saying thank you right and left, and sometimes I forget that. I don't mean to forget. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You're wonderful. Thank you. And, do you have any more? You know, and give them a chance. And who knows what they'll say. And they'll say, boy, I wish I had your perspicacity. I wish I had your ability to think and dream and wonder. I wish I had your ability to look so charming and so wonderful and have people come up to me and say, wow, you make my day. I look at you and I just sparkle all over because you make me so happy. You see, this is unconditional love. And when a person gives a compliment, what is the second requirement after giving a compliment? Disappear, walk away, get out of there. Don't wait for any discussion. If you wait for a discussion, it's liable to be a manipulated thing, as though you said it so you'd get somebody to agree to something, you know. Say it and get out. But if your kids, if your family, if your friends, if a stranger, all the same. With your folks are the toughest ones. You say, Mom, you look just great today. Well, see ya, I'm off to work, I'm off to this, I'm off that. Just a minute, dear, you can't tell me a nice compliment like that and then run away. I want to give you some coffee and cake and I want to, you know, treat you. Mom, you've treated me all my life. You've been the best mom in the world. Thanks, bye, you know. Get out, get out. But if you stay around, and then pretty soon, the wonderful vibrations of that nice compliment are lost. Because they're wheedled away by paying back. And you don't want to do that ever. Never give a compliment because you've been given a compliment. Never give a compliment because it's needed. Never do something for somebody else because it is something important to them. Only do everything in your life with unconditional love, with unconditional love, with unconditional love, with unconditional love. Ellen, what kind of present do I buy for another person? Something
that you like.
Something I like. If I'm buying a present for another person, I buy something I like. And I don't care, and I don't mean that I don't care, but I don't care if they want it, need it, or would enjoy it. I love it, and so I give them one. I have created my world in such an unconditionally loving way that everybody loves everything I got. Everybody loves my toys. Everybody loves my cars. Everybody loves my associates. Everybody loves everybody in my world and everything that I do. Everybody loves it. So therefore, what am I going to do? I just give everything away. And what happens? It pours back continuously. I don't give it away to have it pour back because I'm not interested in having it come back. If I were to give away this recorder here, this is the state of the art and the latest thing available that I know about. But I may not know about others. Now, there's another one that's smaller than this that can do 7 times the things this one does. And the new iPod Apple, you know, telephone. What do they call it? iPhone? The iPhone can do at least 800 things more than the latest computer on the market. Except for its clone. And the Chinese have made a clone of the iPhone, and they have added 800 more uses to it. And good ones. Things that were desired on other phones and things that were everywhere. And they just put it all on there. And iPod, or the iPhone, plans to sell, don't quote me, but they plan to sell 26 million phones in their first year. Well, now, what is the name of the other phone? Do you know offhand? But the Chinese phone, the copycat phone, plans to sell 26 million phones the first month. The first month! Because it is going to be so superior to the iPhone. And I think it's available now, because they said it was going to come out the same time the iPhone came out, or before. If they could have come out before, they would have really swept the market. But they're doing very well. Now, what's going on? What's going on? Next thing you know, they'll have 800 more possibilities in here, and we'll have the ability to convert things right in here as it is, and we'll take this and lay it on another phone, and instantly it'll turn the other phone into gold, or something like that. You know, wouldn't that be interesting? All I have to do is think my thoughts, and it sends my talk down into the phone without batteries, without anything, wonderful. And of course, then the day will come, I think my thought and sends it right to the computer. Or I think my thought, it sends it right to the email, or it sends it to the internet, or it sends it on my personal television program, which is available all over the world whenever I happen to think of doing it, you know. Wouldn't it be interesting? Now, as I walk the path here, I think it'd be interesting to have a television show, a little demanding, but have a television show. Now, I'd give talks, and others would give talks, but it's not interesting looking at a talking head. Talking heads oftentimes get very boring. And so, in the background, I would have the campus running along. You'd see the motion picture of the campus in the background, and you'd see the various things. And then you'd see Rex at play as he's chasing a squirrel or a rabbit or a lizard or whatever the things are that he uses as toys, you know. And then you would see our pond out here, and the pond would be so beautiful and so big, several acres big, and it would have our boat in it, and it would have all of the wonderful fish in it and other things. And Ellen would go out fishing, and she'd sit there in the kayak she'd fish in the what?
Naked.
In the kayak. She would fish in the boat. And as she fished in the boat that we own, she would be sitting there, and she would have no hook on her line, because she wasn't really fishing for fish. She was just fishing for time to sit there and meditate, you know. You like to pop in the boat? You don't want to fish. You see, that's another story, Ellen. As you develop your talents, and you can, as you develop your talents, you will create food before on off the table, and it'll be the most beautiful steaks, the most beautiful fish, the most beautiful things in the world, but they will be tasting exactly like steak and fish, but they'll be ersatz. They will not be steak and fish, they'll be whatever. And it'll be instantly done and instantly had for you in whatever way. Can you imagine, Ellen, we all come down to the lake where you're sitting there fishing, and we say, Ellen, it's dinner time, and you're in charge. And you say, oh, yes. And so you gently waft the boat to shore, and you climb out of the boat and walk over to the shore to a table that we have, and you snap your finger if you have to do that. And the table is completely set and everything's ready. And you say, Herb, you are an imaginator. You are a dreamer. You are off on Never Never Land. No. These things happen all the time. We merely put a time frame on them. They don't have to have a time frame. In some of our movies, we have a scene where it's going, people moving very fast. And have you ever seen time-lapse photography? In time-lapse photography, they show a closed bud, and then little by little it opens up, and little by little it spreads out its beautiful petals, and little by little the stamen comes out, and it's just a lovely, beautiful thing. And then as evening comes, it shows that it's closing, just like our flowers on our ponds. We have these beautiful red and white flowers that are growing on our lily ponds. And in the morning comes, they open up and they say, here I am, son, look at me, I'm beautiful. And then evening comes, it says, okay, good night, and it goes to sleep. And this is beautiful. But these are the things that happen. These are the things that work. Now, you say, Herb, you talked a lot about these things, but you haven't really told us how to do it. Oh, yes. Number one, keep your nose out of other people's business. That gets you nowhere. Number two, be unconditionally loving, starting with yourself. And love yourself absolutely and completely. And as you love yourself absolutely and completely, what you're doing is you're opening the door for all the infinite good of the universe to be revealed to you now in any way you want. You are learning that the meridians of your body are quite real, though you can't see them. And the meridians of your body carry messages from one point to another, healing messages. Isn't that interesting? Think of that once. They take a pin and they put it in the ear, and your hurt toe is now healed. They take a pin and put it in your toe, and your toothache is gone. Now, I don't know all of the healing ramifications of that. That'd be interesting to read too. But that's a whole other science, and it's lovely. But those things I know. I was with Algo Borel as we were at the University of Chicago, University of California, in Los Angeles, UCLA it was. It's a big banquet that they held for the various speakers, in which I was there, and we were speaking on healing, and we were speaking on vibrations, and we were speaking on energy, and Algo Borel was there, and Bill Gladys and Bill, anyhow, from the acupuncture people, you know, who worked with my mother, McGarry, they were there. And we all sat together at lunch, and Olga Burrell was in her late 70s, early 80s, and she was traveling around lecturing everywhere, and a dynamic lecturing person. And she was just a little weary at lunch, and she said to us, she said, I'm a little weary. She says, I've been trucking around night and day, one college after another, one place after another. She says, I'm as bad as you are, Herb. I'm going everywhere and doing everything, but I love it. And so Bill McGarry said, Olga, would you like to feel absolutely relaxed and refreshed and just ready to go for your afternoon lecture today? Ooh, yes, 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 yes. What shot do you have for me, you know? And he said, well, I got a shot in the neck, you know. And she said, what? And, oh, acupuncture, of course, you know, because he's a medical doctor too and everything else. So he said, yeah. So he gave her a shot in the neck, you know, with this acupuncture needle. It went in, you know, maybe an eighth of an inch, no big deal. And so, in fact, he had three needles there. And so we were sitting there talking, and she said to him, can I move my head from side to side? He said, sure. But before he said sure, I said sure. And then everybody looked at me and said, how do you know anything about that? You know. And but then Bill said sure too. But she moved her head, and she was talking away and talking away, and she didn't stop to rest while she was being recuperating. She was just talking away, just like her usual vibrant self. And then it was 20 minutes later, and we were getting ready to get up and go back into the auditorium and so forth. And Bill says, oh, Olga, give me my needles back. And so he took the needles back and put them back in his box. And then Olga got up and she says, well, I feel like I'm ready to go. And Bill says, well, do you think the needles helped? Oh, yes, that's what did it. I couldn't remember, because you know, she forgot. They were in there, and so they were not obnoxious in any way. They were in her neck, and she just didn't even think about them. And, oh, yeah, he says, well, that's what did it. Now, you're going to be able to give your talk this afternoon, and you're going to be filled with such fire and dynamic energy, people are going to think you're a young spring chicken. And of course, I had to chime in, you are, and everyone else said, oh, you are something else again. And so she got up, she gave a great talk, great talk. And she felt so exuberant, so wonderful, and It's something. Now, how does that work? How does that work? Would that be a magic elixir for people to have re-energized themselves through the use of the acupuncture needles? Would that be something if they could re-energize their mind and open up the portals of their mind to be alert and aware to knowledge and to various other things, which they can do, and they do it, but people are afraid of it, and it's understandable, because it's something foreign. Now, in China, it's not something foreign, because that's what most of the doctors use. Most of the doctors make house calls, and they use that. Now this, I must confess, is years ago. In just the last 2 or 3 years in China, it's not China anymore. It's now another nation. China has increased its area of housing and its hospitals, its schools, its level of living, its standard of living. There are more millionaires, billionaires in China than anywhere else in the world, and so forth and so on. It is a up-and-coming country from third world standards, rather from first world standards, and that's quite something. Now, what happened? Do you think that the training that they've given to themselves in acupressure, acupuncture over the years has had anything to do with it? The Chinese culture has come to the United States, and we have one of the tapes here on dancing, and it's quite effective, and you feel renewed when you do the dance, and it's a course they try to sell too, of course, but they sent the tape out, and it's very interesting. Ellen has the tape somewhere, but we live in a world so dynamically changing. And if you're going to sit in the back seat and say, I'm going to do it like I've always done it, like my dad did it, you know, or like my grandpa did it, or whatever, you're going to miss the boat of all the exciting things that happen all around us every moment of our life. Because with unconditional love, we're opening up doorways that we never knew were possible. And with unconditional love, people's purses are being opened so that it can have funds to experiment with unconditional love and all of these other wonderful things. Interesting? Interesting? Yeah. Am I loud enough for you? Good. I'm happy. Well, we'll prepare for our lunch now, and we're going to have a lunch fit for kings and queens and wizards and magic people. Because we're all magic. I love you. Have a nice lunch.